Sky's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sky's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sky.
Spend the day with Sky.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sky Thursday Live.
Radio Sky Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, the voice, the listener, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You're tuned to Asia Stream on January the 30th, 2014, coming to you from Prashanti Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. Dear brothers and sisters, this episode of Morning Glory Thursday Live is not coming to you live. I had to record it a couple of days in advance because I am away from my divine home Prashanti Nilayam for just a few days this week. With Bhagwan's blessings, I hope to be back in the studio to bring you Morning Glory live next week. And when I return next week onwards, there are going to be some changes on Morning Glory. So starting February the 6th, 2014, that is next week, in response to listener feedback, we hope to make Morning Glory the place for debuting all brand new episodes of Triswit Divinity Conversations with Sai devotees from around the globe, and also continue what we currently do, that is debut all Fleeting Moments Lasting Memory interviews with former students of Baba schools and colleges. Also, we'll continue to have live studio conversations on Morning Glory. Now, the difference here is that before any episode of Trist goes on air on our routine schedule on Tuesday, it will first be aired on Morning Glory, so that Morning Glory becomes your interview's central spot. With that announcement, I leave you to enjoy this pre-recorded episode of Morning Glory in which I have lined up two interviews. One, Trist with Divinity, another Fleeting Moments from our Classics collection. Up first, an unmissable conversation between the Santur maestro, Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma, and American journalist, Mr. Ted Henry, which was recorded in the year 2008. This will be followed by an episode of Fleeting Moments Lasting Memories, specially selected again from our Classics collection. Today you will hear one of the earliest student reflections that we had produced when we started Fleeting Moments series, I think also in the year 2008. Even the format is a bit different, and I'm sure you will enjoy hearing the reflection of Sai University alumna, Miss Lakshmi Menon today. So dear listeners, please enjoy the show and excuse me for my absence from the studio today. And I want you to know that I will be looking forward to your feedback to today's Trist with Divinity with Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma and the Fleeting Moments reflection with Miss Lakshmi Menon that I have lined up today. Please enjoy the show. Sai Ram. See you next week again.
Well, okay, I'd like to offer this conversation to Swami and pray that he direct us and fill it with love. It's a real privilege to sit down and talk with you. Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma, a world-renowned santur player. Am I pronouncing it correct, santur?
Absolutely correct.
Okay. Called Pandit. You've achieved the highest level in your country worldwide. Marvelous. I'm so happy to meet you here at Prashanti.
It's my privilege to be here and at Prashanti under the blessings of Swami that we are here and talking.
Yes. Well, I understand you've come here a number of times, many times, and even played in front of Swami. I understand at the 60th birthday you played a concert for Swami, and in his introduction to you he said that anyone listening will be elevated to a higher level. Swami gave you that kind of compliment. Well, is there a connection between spirituality and music that can allow music to rise you up into some other level?
I think definitely the concept of music in Indian culture, Indian civilization, had been very, very old. And right from, 5,000 years ago, we go back to in time, Vedic hymns were chanted in melody. And those were the times when music was not a means of entertainment in India. It wasn't performed on the stage. It was something, a means of meditation. Saints and sages would use the sound, whether it is the chanting of Om or musical sounds, to go inward. So music has a connection right from the beginning in our culture, that music and meditation, music and spirituality, they go hand in hand. I would say they are the two sides of the same coin.
Well, I understand that each one of the senses is related to some level of organization in the external world. For instance, sound is related to the ether. It's,
right.
It's the most expansive.
Right.
That the first element that was created was a sound.
Oh. Right.
So for some reason, sound has extraordinary eminence in the field of the senses. And do you feel that there are certain sounds that activate certain centers or prompt or promote certain levels of consciousness, that certain sounds are related to certain levels?
Definitely. In Indian classical music, there's a very interesting concept of the timings of the ragas. There are certain melodies which will be performed before sunrise. There are others which will be performed after sunrise. Then afternoon, evening, late evening. The whole concept is, this human body is made out of five elements. And whatever changes happen in the nature, we react to that mentally and physically and emotionally. And they have worked on this concept and created melodies with certain combinations of notes in ascending and descending order, which go along with the atmosphere in the nature. And in the ancient times, music was, as I said, was not an entertainment. It was like a means of meditation. And they were doing music in the open air. And you could feel the atmosphere when it is about to the rise of the sun. And there is a very subtle distinction they created with the fourth note in the octave. In the morning melodies, the fourth is minor. And in the evening melodies, after sunset, it becomes fourth sharp. To that extent, the research work had been done that what you feel when you see the rising sun is totally different from what you feel when you see the sunset. Or what you feel when you are in the afternoon sun as compared to moonlit night. So this concept has worked in India from very ancient times.
And the music helps one be in tune with that time of day or that element. Does the music itself help the consciousness move into a better balance with
these? Because we go through different kinds of emotions, say during 24 hours a day, a mundane activity, whatever we do. So in the morning, when you see the sunrise, maybe it's more opportune time, appropriate time for meditation, for spiritual activity. Afternoon is for other activities. Evening is again for prayers. And maybe in the late evening, there are even romantic melodies.
Mm-hmm.
So a person goes through different kinds of emotions during 24 hours of day, and these melodies are appropriately tuned according to that atmosphere.
Well, when do you remember that you as a child recognized this connection, and that music had this kind of effect on you? Can you recall in your own development when...
Right. You know, I would like to narrate here how I started learning music. My father was a very versatile musician. I was born in Jammu and Kashmir, the northern state of India. And he started teaching me music at the age of 5. And there is a tradition of teaching Indian classical music in India, which is known as Guru Shishya Parampara, that master and disciple tradition. And sometimes it happens in the family. Sometimes outsiders come and stay with the guru and learn music. And I remember when I was a young child, I was learning music. This is a very strict discipline one has to follow. You have to learn from the guru. Then there are fixed hours of practice. You have to sit and practice. It so happened with me. I used to shut myself in a room. There was a photograph of Goddess Saraswati. I would sit in front of her and I would forget the time. But it's 4 hours and 5 hours, I'm lost in that melody until my mother comes and knocks at the door that you haven't eaten. It's past lunch time. So I have felt right from my childhood that there is something, some power in this music which takes you away from the worldly atmosphere and you are somewhere else and you don't feel like coming back. And that is what I say, that only can be felt when you are spiritually tuned and you are away from the worldly things. Then you forget the time factor, where you are and what you are doing.
Well, is this very important? Can the senses be attached to the outside world so easily that it dulls your ability to move into this other inner realm? They say that spirituality is an inner path where you're aware of the inner environment. Can the senses pull you away? For instance, if you eat too much or you see something on television, will it affect the way you can move into your music?
I think initially, when a person is trying to go towards spirituality, and these things attract, definitely they have got what we call, not attract, but distraction. It's a distraction. For a musician also, there are very strict system of discipline to be followed. And once you are tuned to that, and then these distractions don't bother you. I remember, again, I would like to narrate here one incident. When I was about 13, 14 years old, and you know, in those days, in my hometown, Jammu, on Ram Navami day, they used to take out a procession of Rama and Sita and chariot and all those things which attract a young mind. And all my friends would run out to watch that. And I'm playing my santoor and sitting there. And I would not miss it as a child. Okay, I should leave my instrument and go out and watch it and then come back with my music. So that kind of, maybe it was a discipline which I inculcated. Or it was the attraction of that melody, of that instrument, of that music, which was so engrossing and that was so attractive for me that I could leave anything else as a child.
Mm-hmm. I understand that in a spiritual path, one first develops a sense of virtue, restraint from going into bad ways, and a control of the emotion. Now, are these essential qualities for a good musician also? Does a good musician also have to have a sensitized moral system and a high level of moral behavior.
In India, there is a very strict system which musicians follow. You know, for example, before going to the concert, we pray. And what I'm talking personally, what I do, I pray to God, I pray to Swami, and I surrender myself. That, take care of me. I'm not going to perform. You have made me a medium. Through me, you are performing. You're going to play. And then, go fresh mind, and like you are going for a prayer. And this is a tradition in India. Sometimes, you know, musicians who enjoy a drink. I know certain musicians, very famous musicians, but when they go for performance, they will not drink. I know of a musician who is a very senior musician, and lately what he used to do was, he would ask the organizers to keep his program early, so that he can finish it off early, and then only he can go and enjoy his drink. So this kind of system is there in India. When we go for music, music is treated, for example, when we are performing, even a musician would not drink or smoke, but even the audience. If audience, suppose we are playing in a place where audience is having dinner, or they are smoking or drinking, this is not done. Why? Because for us, music is not an entertainment. We are not entertainers. We are praying to God through our music. And when you enter in a temple, you don't eat sitting in a temple. You don't smoke. You don't drink. You even don't wear your shoes. You take off your shoes. And that is how we treat the stage when we sit there. So these traditions are there.
Do you think you're in a heightened state of awareness as you enter and greet an audience and know that you're entering into this prayer? Is there a heightened level of awareness as you move into this stage?
I would say we try. We keep on trying that. And it doesn't happen every day. We are human beings. But sometimes I have experienced. And sometimes what happens when I'm playing, in the initial stages, I'm aware, okay, I have to play for 2 hours, there's an audience sitting in front of me, and I should give my best. I'm aware whether my sound system is working okay or not, my accompanist's instruments are tuned or not, once everything is okay. And then something as if you are on some, you know, you are flying a plane and you put it on auto system. It goes on itself. And then, after a while, sometimes I have experienced that I am not there. When I finish my performance, I don't feel like finishing it. But once I finish it, I am not there. Physically, I am sitting there. But I am in some different world. I don't feel like talking to anybody. And that is the time when people come and see you and say, oh, it was great, great performance. Mm-hmm. And that is the point when people saying all these things doesn't matter to me. And I'm misunderstood. Sometimes they might think he is arrogant, he's not responding. But I'm not there, I'm somewhere else. And when I go back to my room, that state of mind goes on, and I don't want it should break and I should come back. But it doesn't happen every day, sometimes.
Well, we're lucky if it happens to us.
I cannot express those things in words. I cannot put it in words.
Do you think this is the bliss state, which in Indian tradition, Vedanta, it is above the mind, that there is a place where the mind drops and one is in ecstasy with some kind of reverie and connection with deity, that one goes into bliss state. Do you consider that?
I think definitely. And my thinking about as a performing musician is that I'm sharing that bliss with my audience. If they also connect with that spirit, and they can also, a couple of incidents I have seen, once I was playing in Barcelona, and in Spain, I and my son Rahul both were playing together. And one accompanying drone instrument went out of tune. My eyes were closed when I was playing. And I wanted to tune that instrument. I opened my eyes and I just looked at the audience. So far I could see 15, 20 rows. Everybody was sitting like this and eyes closed. So this was the effect of music. That's what I say. If the audience connects with that, they can also experience that bliss with the musicians.
Can you feel this interconnectedness with the audience? I mean, can you tell there are different kinds of audiences? Can you tell, do you feed off of some of the feedback that's coming from the audience? Is there an interrelationship between you and the audience?
There is definitely. Indian music is created not only by the musician, but by the audience as well. Yes. How? Sometimes, you know, if you look at somebody, you play some phrase, and you open your eyes and you looked at somebody, the way you smile or the kind of expression I see on the face of a listener, that connects. That I can immediately know what I was trying to say, this guy is connected with that. Sometimes there are other means of expression in India also. They are more vocal. Bahut acche or very good, wonderful. They say loudly. But I think a silent expression is more subtle and more inspiring for a musician.
Well, can you feel the level of bliss, let's say, in an audience, without looking? Is it possible to be so sensitized to another person or to an audience, just as you are to music, that even if the music quiets down, you can feel the level of awareness or level of
definitely,
happiness?
Definitely. We immediately come to know. We immediately come to know how the audience is reacting, in which state of mind they are. And there are different kinds of audience. When you are playing for an audience of, say, 2,000 people, they are all in different frame of mind. They can react differently to the same melody. But there could be some people, few of them, who are at the same wavelength as you are. And they react the way I am thinking. Others might be taking it differently. There could be a melody which, according to me, is very spiritual. But there is a person who is taking it in another way, thinking, it's something very vigorous and very enjoyable and something different. So from individual to individual also, I think the reaction of music differs. But if there are few people who are connected at the same wavelength the musician is, and then that rapport is very important.
Well, we know people can affect other people in many ways. When people were around Ramana Maharshi, they described that just being in his presence changed their level. Do you think music has this capacity and plays a role in the world community to calm it down, to give it some insight, to give it some sense that there's something higher to reach for, to show some kind of direction? Do you think music in general has definitely this task?
Definitely. I have experienced it myself. First of all, it's always said music is a universal language. And we can communicate through music. We may not speak each other's language, but melody and rhythm is same. And through music can calm down people. In India, we have got Navarasas, 9 emotions, and there are different kinds of emotions in that, in those 9 rasas. And there is one kind of emotion which is repulsive, anger. jealousy, all those kinds, but we don't take those emotions in music. They are shown in drama, because you are showing a hero and some is a villain and all that. But in music, we take the softer emotions. And when the softer emotion music is played, it can definitely calm down. And it can, even people who are very aggressive could become peaceful.
What is your understanding and your observation of this trend among young people, young music, where bands can be playing hard rock, they can be screeching and screaming, they can be drinking and all kinds of drugs, and the youth can be hysterical and wild? What's your take on that? What do you think is going on?
I would, before I come to your answer, I would like to narrate one anecdote which happened with me. I was touring in Poland about 30 years ago, and there was a Japanese jazz group. They were sharing the stage with me. First they used to perform, and there are different kinds of jazz, and this pianist after a while would literally start banging his piano. And the drummer would break his sticks in 2-3 pairs, tear off his shirt while performing. It was really very, very aggressive kind of music. Mm-hmm. And after they finished, I used to perform. And they would come, all of them, and sit and watch my program. And one day, the leader of that group came to me. He said, "I want to share something with you. Your music gives so much peace of mind." So this was a musician who was playing different genre of music. And in India, it is also happening, what you mentioned. But I have also experienced young people, sometimes they come to my concert. And afterwards they tell me, "This is the first time I have been to an Indian classical music concert of this type, and I feel I have been missing something. Whatever I have been listening to so far, now in future, I would not miss a classical concert." I do a lot of interaction with the young students. I go to the colleges. I perform there. I talk with them. And one day I was sitting in IIT Delhi, and students were talking with me. And I asked them, "What kind of music you listen to?" They said, "We listen to what kind of music?" I said, "Do you listen to rock music?" "Yeah, of course." "And heavy metal and all that?" I said, "When do you listen to this kind of music?" They used one Hindi word, "When we have to do halla gulla, when you have to become rowdy, we listen to that music." I said, "Do you listen to Indian classical music?" They said, "Yes." One boy told me, "I listen to your santoor when I am preparing for my exams." I said, "Why? Doesn't it distract you?" He said, "No, when I put your music and I study, I get better concentration." So these young people also know where to use what kind of music. And they are listening to all different genres of music.
Yes. I understand you are going to want to do some kind of research on the effect of music also on the mind. But before getting into that, how is it that someone so sensitive to subtle vibration, to sound, became attracted to Swami? What attracted you to Swami, and when did that happen?
It was nearly 38, 39 years back. It so happened, very strange. There was a family doctor who, I think he himself had not met Swami, but he had heard about Swami. And he was kind of unknown devotee. And he would come to me and tell me about Swami's miracles. And I think the viewers would laugh at my reaction. I used to be very skeptical. I used to argue with him.
This is common, I think.
So we used to have arguments.
Yes.
I said, "Doctor, what happens then? How it helps the humanity?" And those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So one day he told me, "Now enough of argument. Swami is coming to Bombay and you come with me." and he is very fond of music, you bring your santoor with you. I said reluctantly, I said, okay, if you want, then I'll come. So we went over there. And there were thousands of people sitting there. And Swami, somehow, I don't know where he was delayed. We waited for 1.5 hours. Swami didn't come. And I came back. So that was my first encounter which didn't happen. Then doctor was persuading me all the time. There was one suburb in Bombay and he took me over there. He said, you come. There is one house. There is a photograph of Swami. And all the time Vibhuti is coming from there. You come. And he was a father figure. He was a very elderly person.
Vibhuti is the ash that's actually materializing on the picture itself.
On the picture, on the frame. Mm. So I went over there. I took my santoor. And I saw a big framed photograph of Swami totally covered with ash. And the owner of the house came and he removed the ash, put it in a small cup, and I started playing. And I'm watching, when I'm playing, Vibhuti is coming. And by the time I finished, the whole frame was covered. So then I talked to this person. I said, how did it start? He told me another story. He said, my wife used to go to Swami, and I used to argue with her. Don't go there. What is there? I don't believe in him. Then he got sick. He got problem of gout. And he went to many doctors, and finally, as it happens, he came to Puttaparthi, and Swami touched him. He said, what's wrong with you? And he started walking. He said, when we came back to Bombay, we went inside the house, and my wife said, look, there is Vibhuti. He said, although I was cured, I still was skeptical. I said, no, this must be some dust. We had been out of house, clean it. He said, she cleaned it, and after 5 minutes, it was still there. And since then, it was coming there. So that was my first experience in absence with Swami. But next year, when Swami came to Bombay, I think it was in 69, around that time. And I was called to perform. I don't know who organized that. And there were many film stars, directors, politicians, all sorts of people, judges. And I played, other people performed, and I was sitting quietly. When Swami was free, Swami said, I like your music. I want to talk to you. I said, Swami, you come tomorrow. Before I could say, because next day I was busy, Swami immediately said, no, tomorrow you are not free. You come day after tomorrow. So day after tomorrow, he said, bring your wife with you. We were with Swami for 15-20 minutes. And he told me the whole, he knew everything about me. Everything about my life. And then he said, what do you want? I said, Swami, I just need your blessings. My wife said, no, Swami, give him something. And Swami waved his hand, materialized a ring, and put in my finger. He said, size is okay? I said, Swami, perfect. Then he said one sentence which I can never forget. He said, from today, my home is your heart, and your home is here. Come to me whenever you want. And since then, I have been coming to Swami, and many, many miracles have happened, and so many things. If I start talking about that, if you want, I can narrate a couple of things.
Well, why don't we then narrate a couple of things?
So, once I was performing, I was touring America. And this is a very interesting thing which happened with me. I was supposed to play in Toronto. The organizers were very worried. This was their second concert of Indian classical music. And their first concert was not successful. Audience-wise and other things. And that day when we were going to the concert hall, it was raining very heavily. And this guy who was driving me, he said, I don't know what's going to happen today, how audience would come. So anyhow, Zakir Hussain, one of the most famous tabla players of our country, he was with me, both of us. Anyhow, the hall was packed. Program was very successful. After the concert, I go to somebody's house for dinner. And here I come to experience something which I had not expected. This guy tells me, he said, very strange thing happened today when you were performing. I said, what happened? He said, let me tell you, there is some Swami called Satya Sai Baba. I have seen his photographs. I am not a believer in him. I have never seen him. But very strangely, when you were playing 3-4 times, your face was not there and he was there. He says, still I am telling you, I am not a believer, but I am puzzled what I saw. 3-4 times it happened, your face was removed and his face was there as if he was playing. Next weekend, I am in San Francisco. And again, we were playing in Berkeley. And we had very big problem with the sound system. It wasn't working. So we gave up. I went inside the green room. I prayed to Swami. I leave it to you. No, you handle. We have given up. So when I come back on the stage, same sound system is working perfectly. Hall was packed. Program went off very well. Next evening, we went to dinner to somebody's house. And one person came to me. He asked me, he took me in a corner. He said, I was wearing Swami's ring. He said, are you a believer in Baba? I said, yes. He said, I want to share something with you. He said, my brothers, they don't believe in Baba, but I do. But yesterday once, very strange thing happened. I said, what happened? He said, when you were playing 3-4 times, your face disappeared. And Swami's face was there. Now, in 1 week's time, one believer, one non-believer, having the same experience. This is Swami's Leela.
Do you think that Swami becomes a living presence in the life of his devotees, that he becomes so close to them, he may even become them? Do you think that this is who Swami is, that he has this capacity to be in the lives of his devotees wherever they are, as many as they are, that he becomes a living presence and influences us?
I think we have experienced that. We have experienced that.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it?
That you know, what I think is, we just surrender. It's beyond us. We should just surrender and not try to analyze. Yesterday, I was sitting in the darshan. One doctor asked me something, who is here at Puttaparthi. He said, we have heard many things about Swami's medical knowledge. But tell us, have you experienced something about Swami's musical knowledge? Some technical things? So I was reminding of one incident, which is a very technical thing for any person to say. My son Rahul is also blessed by Swami. He also plays santoor. About 10-12 years ago, one day I was teaching him one phrase. There is a term called chromatic, where you use minor and major notes one after the other. I was teaching him that phrase, which is very difficult to play on instrument santoor, which I play. And he picked up very fast. And within minutes, he started playing it very fast. That night, Swami came in his dream. and told him, "You are learning very well. You played that thing very well." After a few months we came here. Swami called us for interview. And Swami did the whole action. Only a musician can know this phrase to be played when hand will go here on the left, on the right, on the left, on the right again. He did the whole action. He told me, "See, that phrase is very difficult to play on santoor," and he picked up it so fast. Now this is a very, very technical explanation which maybe a sitar player will also not be knowing, which Swami explained. So what we say is, he is omnipresent. And that is our personal experience.
What about these other rings? Are they also materialized by Swami?
All these rings I am wearing have been materialized by Swami. And this ring was given by Swami, materialized after my concert on Swami's 60th birthday, which you mentioned in the beginning of the interview. And this ring has been changed about 5 times. If I go into detail, that will take so much time, but I will definitely narrate one incident here. When I got this particular ring, before that something else. It was a Dashera day. There was a Dashera celebration. And we came here. And with me, there were a few other musicians. Hari Prasad Chaurasia, the world-renowned flautist, he was also there. Pandit Viji Jog, violinist, who is no more now, he was there. Anyhow, so 3 of us were performing that evening. Hari Prasad Chaurasia's program was going on. He was about to finish. He was playing the last number, and it was announced after him, Shiv Kumar Sharma will perform. My name was announced, and suddenly Swami got up, and I'm waiting in the wings with my instrument to go on the stage. And Swami came and suddenly asked me, "When are you leaving?" No mention about the program. I said, "Swami, whenever you say." He said, "Come meet me tomorrow morning." And he had told the announcer, "No more program now." And it was announced, "There is no more program now. This is the end of the evening." And all my friends, musicians, they got very annoyed. They told me, "This is a great insult to a musician. You have been invited here. Your name was announced. And Swami cancelled your program. This is not done." They were first timers. And one of my friends, he was very, very angry. He said, "Ever if I get a chance to see Baba, I must tell him, you invite musicians and you insult them like this." I kept on listening. I said, "Look, whatever you are saying, I don't agree with that." I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I mean, I have come here as a devotee of Swami, not as a performer. And when I come here, according to me, the first step is to surrender your ego. If I come here with that ego, oh, I'm a great santoor player, most famous of India, and they are treating me like this, no. When I come here, my first step is to surrender my ego. And this is Swami's wish. I am not feeling any bad. And if you people want to go away, you go, I will have to stay. Because Swami has asked me, tomorrow come and see me." No, they were in a fix. They said, "No, if you are not going, then we are also not going. But we are very upset. But we will tell him tomorrow morning." One person was very angry. Anyhow, next morning we went there. Whatever the time Swami had given, he said 9:30. Till 10 o'clock Swami didn't come. Again they started. See, no value of time. I must tell Swami when he comes. So this guy again went on and on. Finally Swami came. called us inside. Swami materialized Vibhuti, gave it to everybody, didn't give it to me. And then he says, show me your ring. The ring I was wearing, and he took my ring also back. And now he is sitting. And immediately, the person who was talking too much, that we will go back and I will tell him, he said, what is wrong with you? Since yesterday you are talking, let's go back. You go all around the world, you have come here, and all the time you are saying, let's go back. What is wrong with you?
Swami saying this to people.
To this person, yes. Who was saying, I will tell Swami all this.
Yes.
He was dumbfounded. Everyone is quiet. Now, Swami asked me, what do you want? He's holding my ring in his hand. And that was a ring with Shirdi Baba's statue on that, golden. I said, Swami, I only want you. Swami blew in that ring, and that became a golden ring with Swami's photograph. He said, now, there is a word in Telugu, he said, no, you are Bangaru. Bangaru means gold. And he put that ring in my finger. He said, this evening, only your program will be there, and I will listen to your program. And I had asked you because I wanted to change your ring.
It's a beautiful story. This brings us into a very unusual area here, which is Swami's role in helping us shed the ego. Because for many people, this is impossible to understand. The kinds of behaviors, the kinds of situations that can develop, they're all new, they're all different, they're so unusual. And a bystander looking would think that it's the worst thing in the world.
Right.
But, I mean, they just couldn't understand it at all. But we understand that he is the great teacher, and he's teaching us something about giving up the ego. Do you see this in Swami? Do you see this as a powerful aspect of Swami?
Great aspect of Swami's teachings. He teaches so many things just by looking at you. You know, sometimes he would look at you as if you are the closest person, and after half an hour he would just look at you blank as if he doesn't recognize who you are. And I have experienced in these 39-40 years, there was a time for 2-3 years Swami didn't talk to me. Once, to this extent, once Swami came to Bombay and I got a message that I should organize a program, and I presented the program. I called all the leading musicians, and I am introducing them to Swami, and they are presenting their program. Swami is talking to them, but not talking to me. So this is a teaching, you know.
It's so mysterious too when you're living it with him.
Yes.
That he can ignore or he can accept. There's something uncanny about it, and something that's not even human about it. The capacity to change a person with a look.
Right.
And yet, most people will take a look at it and be unable to tolerate at all. Even though, when it's done to the devotee, they're loving it. Even though it hurts sometimes,
right.
They say, this is a teaching. We're learning from actual involvement
right.
with him. You have one more ring?
There are so many. This again has been changed number of times. So what happened with this ring? When I first time got it, I was still a little bit skeptic. I narrated that incident. He got me that ring first time. After 2 or 3 months, people started asking me, you are wearing this ring? This is Satya Sai Baba's ring? Yes. What has changed in your life after wearing this? They would ask me. One day, after hearing all these questions, you know, I was in my hometown in Jammu. And before, I had a habit, right now also, before I go to bed, I pray to Swami, I do pranams to the ring, and I go to sleep. And morning when I get up, I do the same thing again. So it was a terrace. I was sleeping on that terrace. It was open air. And I went to sleep. When I went to sleep, I started thinking. People keep on asking me, what has changed in my life? Actually speaking, nothing has changed. So with this thought, I went to sleep. When I got up, I wanted to see the ring. A ring was there, but there was a golden bust of Swami that was missing. I got very upset. I started searching all my sheets in the bed and pillow and everywhere. It wasn't there. I got very upset. Then I thought, maybe I doubted. I also started thinking what has changed. So this something has gone wrong with my ring. So I was just standing by the wall. Sun was rising. There was a parapet. And suddenly I see that small golden bust is sitting on that parapet, which was impossible. I'm sleeping to get out of that place and go there. With great difficulty, I called some small boy and retrieved it. Now I came back. I tried to fix it with so many solutions. It wouldn't fix. I put it in one small silver box and used to carry it with me everywhere. And I was in Sweden. I had a dream. Swami came in my dream and told me, why don't you wear that ring? And dream was over. One solution which I had tried earlier, I tried it once again. It was fixed. I came back to India. Swami came to Bombay. And I got a message that Swami wants you to come. I have been so fortunate that I have played for Swami like this. Only Swami is sitting and I am playing here. 2-3 students, nobody else. And that evening I had a concert. I got a message from Indu Bhai. Swami wants you to come and play. I said, but I am committed. I have got a concert in the evening. He says, okay, he called me back. He says, no, after you finish the concert, you come. Then there was a problem with the tabla player. There was no tabla player. He said, no, Swami says, you come without tabla player. So after the concert, I went there. There was 20-25 people. And I played without tabla player. After I finished, Swami asked them to go out. I was sitting. My wife was there. He said, how are you? How was your tour? And I started narrating my story. I said, Swami, this ring... I just uttered ring, then the rest of the story Swami completed. He says, yes, after Swami gave ring, people started asking, what happened? What have you achieved? And one day the doubt came in your mind and ring was spoiled. And then you were in Sweden and Swami told you in the dream, fix it. And now then it is okay. What is the problem? He narrated the whole story. He said, you started doubting. So, this is one of the stories about this ring.
Uh-huh. Yes, wonderful, wonderful. Does this mean that we should be aware, the devotee should be aware, that everything changes when we carry Swami with us, when He's walking with us at all times?
We have to be
everything.
Yes,
everything changes.
We have to be very, very careful with Swami.
Yes. Do you think, you know, there are people that may just trivialize it in some way and say, well, there are many yogis in India that can do the same thing. Are you aware of such a thing, of anybody who has been able to show the level of awareness, the omnipresence, the omniscience of Swami? Are there other such people?
Not to my knowledge. But I have seen, you know, how it happens. Swami is sitting in Puttaparthi. Vibhuti is coming in California, in London, in Bombay, in Tokyo. How is it happening? No scientific explanation can be given about this.
And one of the most unusual aspects of this is that people haven't picked up on this and are amazed by it and say, look, if this can happen, if a what appears to be a human can produce matter, it has far-reaching effect on science. But we don't see anybody talking about its effect on the behavioral sciences, on the physical sciences, and yet it's not a rare occasion. It's happening all over the world.
All over the world.
What do you make of this, that people have not picked up on it and said, what is this?
Right.
What do you think is behind people not even paying attention?
They're unfortunate. They are not blessed.
Do you think it seems so obvious if something's materializing on a picture that anybody could see it, but do you think in order for somebody to be able to see Swami and appreciate him, there has to be his blessing?
We believe in past karmas. And this is a very scientific thing. Your karmas, you have to live. And I think this is our past karmas, our blessings from past karmas, that we are here. We are talking to Swami. Millions of people around the world, even Swami's devotees, they are having different kind of experience. I have known people who haven't come here, and they have experienced in their own place, sitting over there, seeing Swami's miracles and experiencing. I would like to narrate another incident here. Long time back, about 15, 20 years ago, I was flying from Rome to Bombay. And it was a hopping flight. It stopped in Athens. And from Athens, about 15, 20 people boarded the flight. And there was one young couple. They came and sat next to me. And how the conversation starts, I was wearing Swami's ring. And this young lady said something in Greek to this man. And he said, do you know Swami? Yeah. Suddenly, you know, some stranger comes and asks you this. I said, who? He says this. Swami's photo was there on my ring. I said, how do you know? He said, we are going to Puttaparthi. And we are sitting next to you. I said, but how you came to know about him? So he told me, a Greek person, young man, he said, I was facing problems in life. I was miserable. Financial problems, employment problems, my family problems. And one day, somebody came in my dream. And he said, don't worry. Your problems will be over. And blessed me. He says, I forgot about it. He says, after 2-3 days, I was walking in a street and was passing by a bookshop, and there was a book. I saw the same picture who came in my dream. He said, I went inside the bookshop. It was a book in Greek. And I asked. They said, yes, this is a person, Satya Sai Baba in India. It is about him. Then he said, I found out who are the people who have published this book here. Then he found out that a group, Swami's devotees there. And after 2-3 weeks, his problems were solved. Now, how could you explain this?
No.
How could you explain? Any scientific explanation can be given. Now, he says, first time I'm going to India. And there is a group of 20 people, and we are going there and we'll stay there. I have met so many people like this, traveling. I keep on traveling in different parts of the world, and I keep on meeting people like this.
You know, there's so much to talk to you about music, about the different kinds of states that one can enter into through music. Even I understand you're going to, are you doing some research with music and with healing properties of music?
I'm working on that, and with some of my students who are doctors. So, but it's a time-taking thing. Mm-hmm. But definitely, we have found out the relation between music and the therapeutic value of music. And it can cure certain diseases, definitely.
I remember I was working with hospice patients, patients that were in the process of dying, and it was quite unusual to see. There was a harpsichordist who would come into the room, and many patients left in the music of the harpsichord, that the music allowed them to move out of the body and into the transition. It was interesting to see that. Well, I understand that you're thinking of a TV program. Are you considering doing some kind of TV program?
We are thinking of that, if we can get some slot on television about Indian classical music and Indian classical music's powers and reaction towards...
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming to the end here. At the end of this program, I'd like to have some footage of you playing for Swami, which would be beautiful. Mm-hmm. And to end, I wonder if you can tell us what's on your mind before you play for Swami, and what is your prayer and your offering like? Can you put into words what goes on your frame of mind as you're going to offer this music to Swami? What goes through your mind?
It's very difficult to put it in words. But I must say, wherever I perform, whether here in Puttaparthi, when Swami physically is there, or in any part of the world, I feel that Swami is there with me. And I'm playing in front of Him. Now, this is something very personal, but I, in this context, I would like to share it with the viewers who are Swami's devotees. They could understand. Once I was sitting with Swami in the interview room with my wife, and Swami was talking, and suddenly He said, "Ma," to my wife, "you know one thing. Wherever He plays, Swami is there." So these words, after hearing that, I had nothing to say.
And you feel His presence with you.
I feel it.
As I do and as many, many devotees.
I feel it. And that day, Swami said this Himself. So what I feel, what I pray, that I heard from Him.
Well, that's a wonderful way to end this interview. I'm so happy to have had the pleasure to talk with you.
It's so nice to talk to you.
Make a good friend with such a wonderful musician and person. Thank you very much. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
You're listening to Radio Sai Global Harmony, bringing you the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Fleeting moments, lasting memories is our weekly radio series in which we bring you conversations with the former students of Bhagwan Baba's schools and colleges.
Let me narrate to you an episode. Our room leader was Kotesa. I asked him, "Is it compulsory to go for darshan?"
Oh my God.
I had the nerve to ask him that.
I think it's a very sea change when you become a Sai student, because it's only when I joined the Satya Sai College I discovered that this God is not a photograph on the wall, and He's not something so distant. It's something very, very near you.
And this was lovely, because there you had on the gymnastic bench the student on one side, Swami on the other side, locked in battle arm wrestling
with Swami.
With Swami.
And having been given the divine golden opportunity to have studied in his institutions and directly experienced his love, then we have to really live our lives to reflect his teachings.
Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories is our weekly radio series in which we bring you conversations with the former students of Bhagwan Baba's schools and colleges. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai on the Morning Glory segment of Thursday Live, which starts at 9:40 a.m. To know about the timings of this weekly series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website, radiosai.org. You can also download and listen to Fleeting Moments at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/sci-students. That is radiosai.org/sai-students, with Sci Students being one word. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Greetings from Prashantinilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. You are tuned to Radio Sai, the voice of global harmony. Fleeting moments, lasting memories. Dear listeners, welcome to a series of reflections on close encounters of the divine kind. In this segment, we bring you excerpts of the experiences that former students of Bhagwan Baba relive and draw upon as their signposts in life, years and decades after graduating from his schools, colleges and university. It is a recall of God moments etched in students' hearts for eternity. Miss Lakshmi Menon is a former student of the Sri Satya Sai University Anantapur campus, from where she completed her BA and master's degree in English literature. Lakshmi is currently engaged in service activities in Prashantinilayam, the sacred township she calls her home. Today, she takes us down memory lane to relive some precious and personal moments when she experienced Baba's unconditional love. Years after graduating, she treasures and derives inspiration from him as she cruises through her journey called life. Fleeting moments of his love have left Lakshmi with lasting memories for a lifetime. Over to Lakshmi Menon.
Many moments make up a life. Some happy, some sad, some remarkable, some mundane. But there are certain moments which stand out in our lives because they are moments filled with the presence of God. What then of moments when we experience the tender love and infinite compassion of a living, loving God? One who showers us with His love and grace in His physical presence and envelops us with His divine protection when we are away from Him physically. Such moments are many in the lives of the devotees of Bhagavan. However, the bond that he shares with the students is something truly unique.
Before the age of computerized railway reservations, the Anantapur students used to face considerable difficulties in getting confirmed railway reservations for their travel to their hometowns. Especially students from far-off destinations like West Bengal, Delhi and the Northeast used to face greater challenges in making foolproof travel arrangements. Let us find out how the Chancellor of the Sai University looked after his students.
Those days in the 1980s, direct trains from Anantapur to big towns and cities were not that many, and railway ticketing was not computerized either. Typically, our journey home took a couple of days. From the sheltered environment of the Anantapur campus to suddenly enter the hustle and bustle of cities like Bangalore, Madras, or Calcutta felt like a minor culture shock. But while traveling, we used to concretely experience Swami's presence. People would mysteriously appear to help us on our way, and then just as mysteriously disappear when we turned around to thank them. Meanwhile, our confidence got further boosted when once we heard of Bhagawan's response to the words of some devotees. These people, well-meaning no doubt, told Swami that now that the students were all going home for holidays, Swami could take some rest finally. Swami often used to declare those days that his only property consisted of his students, and that he spent 75% of his time with them, because all his hopes for the world rested on his students. Swami's reply to these people was very thrilling for us. He said, "How can I take rest now? I have to go with each and every one of them, travel with them and see that they reach their home safely. So how can I rest?"
One particular journey home taught Lakshmi the unforgettable lesson of Bhagwan Baba's love, protection and concern for his students. The following incident stands testimony to the wonderful statement of the Lord.
It was the spring of 1992. We were a group of 21 traveling from Anantapur to Kerala. Many of us had completed our courses of study, and so we had a lot of luggage too. I still do not know how it happened. Now, it would be an unthinkable risk to take. But on the day of our homeward journey, we had only current tickets and no reservation. We boarded the train at mid-morning from Anantapur station, and we would all be reaching different parts of Kerala the next day. The train came. We got into the carriage that came in front of us. Many of us stuck like refugees near the washrooms, but the resilience of youth did not deter our high spirits. We thought we would handle the train ticket examiner when he came and not worry till then. Cross the bridge when you come to it. After some time, to our dismay, we learned that this particular coach would be going a relatively shorter distance with this train, and then it would get attached to some other train at a station that we would reach at midnight. So we decided to get down at Dharmavaram railway station and relocate to another coach that would go all the way to our destination. With tons of luggage, it was indeed a daunting task. As planned, we got down at Dharmavaram and, forming a human chain, were passing on pieces of luggage quite a further way off, when a TTE accosted me and demanded what we were up to. I had really no time to explain, so I mumbled something incoherent and continued to pass luggage. The train would be leaving any moment. He watched us for some time and then he asked me a little impatiently, "Are you students from Sai Baba's college at Anantapur?" On hearing Swami's name from a total stranger, I stopped in my tracks and paid attention. Then he went on, "See, madam, we got a message from our superior officer that a group of girl students from Sai Baba's college at Anantapur would be coming by this train, and that we were to keep 21 berths ready for them at Dharmavaram." As I listened open-mouthed, he went on, "If you don't care to claim those berths right now, I'm going to dispose them off to others." There was nothing else to do. After that, we quickly reassembled and triumphantly went to claim our reserved berths. I tried to ask the TTE who this superior officer was and how did he send the message and so on, but he was extremely vague and after checking our tickets disappeared. We had told no one of our plight. Also, we would never have known that this arrangement had been made for us and whom to approach to avail of this facility. But for the fact of having got into the wrong coach, we would not have met this TTE either. In this world, even when you plead for help, not many people bother, or even if they do, it seldom comes free. But in this case, it was sudden, unexpected help that came unasked in our time of need. We had been anxious, but perhaps in the exuberant and trusting faith of the young, had truly surrendered to Swami. We believed that somehow things would be taken care of. We never imagined it would be done in such a royal way, though.
Self-confidence is psi-confidence. Even when we appear to be alone, God is with us, in us, and around us at all times. As Lakshmi learned on the last leg of her trip home that summer.
The story does not end here. I was to travel till Trivandrum, but I had to get down at a small station called Alwar, and then board another train, since this one wasn't going all the way. I got down and went to the ladies' waiting room that was next to a small cafeteria. The room rapidly filled up with many women, but after a while, I heard some commotion, and then to my surprise, I saw that people were hastily leaving en masse. On inquiring, I was told some rioting had suddenly erupted in the town on account of a religious issue, and a violent mob was approaching the railway station. I was stuck there, all alone, with my entire luggage and nowhere to go. I could hear the mob coming nearer. I just quietly sat inside. Strangely, I did not feel any sense of panic. It was one of those times when I was sure Swami would protect me. So I waited. I heard sounds of shattering glass next door and shouts and yells. After some time, there was silence. Slowly, people started coming back. I too got up and went to investigate. I found out then that the mob of rioters had come till the cafeteria next door, smashed the windows and so on, and then simply retreated back the way they came. Some invisible hand had made them turn back and go away from where I was sitting all alone, relying on the Lord, without whose will not even a blade of grass can move. The same Lord who had assumed the guise of a superior officer of the railways, the one who mysteriously answered unasked, unwritten petitions, was at work here too.
Baba's students repeatedly experience his all-knowing nature. The indweller of their hearts is aware of every pang of pain, every prayer and wish. How and when he chooses to fulfill is his will.
Once we, the girl students, had all come to Puttaparthi from Anantapur for Swami's darshan. And those days, we were allowed to take trays of toffees if it happened to be our birthday or some such occasion. I was sitting with a friend behind a girl holding a tray. Swami came near us, picked a whole fistful of chocolates and showered them merrily all over us and walked away. After he had gone quite a distance, I found his friend suddenly weeping uncontrollably. All I knew was that she wasn't well. She had some eye ailment, and then she told me what had just occurred. She had some problem in her eye, due to which she would see black spots in her line of sight. A doctor at home had advised minor surgery. But she was terrified of being operated upon. When Swami came for darshan, these black spots in her eye covered him too, and she could not see him clearly. She was very remorseful at this, and that is when a toffee thrown casually and playfully by Swami hit her eye and dislodged her glasses. She was in tears, but after a while, she wiped her eyes, still throbbing with the direct hit from Swami, when to her amazement, she discovered she could see clearly. The black spots that had plagued her vision for weeks had simply melted away.
With such intense and tangible proofs of His omniscience, omnipresence and omnipotence, how does Lakshmi understand Bhagawan Sri Sathya Sai Baba or beloved Swami as He is known to His students?
This is what Swami is: sweet, simple, natural, unostentatious, jovial and compassionate beyond compare. He watches over us, as He often says, like how the eyelids guard the eyes. And yet, He never expects anything back. He used to tell us about the value of gratitude, of showing it to our alma mater, our parents. The only thing He ever expects from His students is to bring a good name to Him and to be ideals in society. His life is a silent saga of love, and our life with Sai is a challenging journey of hope and love towards a truly meaningful existence.
Dear listeners, you just heard a reflection by Miss Lakshmi Menon, an alumna of the Sri Sathya Sai University, Anantapur campus, describing her divine experiences with Bhagawan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. We hope you enjoyed this journey down memory lane. It came to you as a part of the Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories series of experiences by the former students of the Sri Sathya Sai Educational Institutes. Her reflection was an excerpt selected from a more detailed account published in our e-journal Heart to Heart. To read Lakshmi's entire article, please visit our website www.radiosai.org and select the June 2007 issue of the Heart to Heart journal. The story appears in the Swami and Me segment. Thank you for joining us today. Please stay tuned to more such reflections in the segment entitled Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Same time, same day, next week. Till then, Sai Ram from Prashanthinilayam.